Radio Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetRito.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
Oh, I swear everything is a trip with no luggage. Anyways, October 27, 2021, allegedly, according to that thing, we call a calendar, and I'm already being told my mic is low. Anyway, thanks for listening live, but you could be catching us somewhere else, sometime else. I appreciate you. Yes, indeed, we went to air late by about, 6-7 minutes, and if you're listening to the podcast, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Anyway, this is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you can hear what I'm saying. The O'Chelly Effect, it could be another time, another place. It could be on regular radio. It could be elsewhere. Who knows? If my guests can restrain themselves from saying something that's not FCC friendly, yeah, it might get sent out there. So you never know. Anyway, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, welcome to Wednesday or Wednesday, the middle of the week. William Ramsey is with me here in the first hour, and gotta tell you, he's a fascinating character who I've only gotten to speak to one time before on the 2000s show that we did some months ago, and I sort of went through general topics with him. Tonight, I actually get a chance to talk to him about some of the fantastic writing he does. Now, I have read various things by this man. I got to tell you, I've listened to his show, and if you listen to my network, you've heard some of his shows. Recently, I just asked him, right before air, I took an extra minute or two to say, hey, are you not doing your show anymore? Because I haven't gotten any recent shows. I mean, I can't keep track of everything. And he assures me that he's going to send me plenty of content. So you'll be hearing William Ramsey interviews and who knows, maybe some solo rants here on O'Chelly.com if you stay tuned to the online radio station and all that. Because he is of interest, definitely a different style from me and all that. And now I need to shut up and just ask him how he's doing. Mr. Ramsey, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's great to be with you, Chuck.
Oh, man, I'm really happy to have you on, actually. And especially because, again, I was sort of pressed for time and tired, and I did an 8-hour broadcast that day, which you were, I think, 20 or 25 minutes of.
That's exhausting.
So I was a little burnt, and I was a little, you know, a little overwhelmed. I had my help from my friend here, who is on the call now, Nature Boy. Everybody knows he's assisting me with production stuff at this point. But, you know, I was still 8 hours of broadcast is a bit much. So honestly, I didn't get to talk to you about the most fascinating book title. And I'll have to be honest with you. I've only read like things that people have said about this particular book title. I don't know it. I know you did a radio show, kind of talking about it some months ago. And I, again, to be frank, I try not to listen to too many other people's radio shows all that often because I don't want to be unduly influenced. You know, I stick to the uniqueness of what it is that I do. So that I never sound like I'm just, you know, even though I hear the best idea, the best phrase, the best whatever, I don't ever want to be seen as an imitator. So sometimes I purposely avoid stuff, and I really shouldn't with your stuff because it's so dynamic. You go from some of the darkest sort of overbearing agendas that one could look at on the, you know, the grand chessboard, so to speak, the ethereal. The almost spiritual or maybe beyond spiritual, you know, ugliness. And then you'll also go into true crime, and you'll also go into, you know, what is illing the minds and spirits and possibly the bodies of those we see around us. I mean, it's kind of weird the way I look at your work. You're all over a bunch of stuff, and this book title sums up, in my mind, the best way, and you informed me that it's your most recent book, and I didn't even know that until we just went to broadcast, and you said something about updating it, so help me out here. Tell these people about, you know, the name of the book, and obviously not, don't give them too much, but give them a brief synopsis of what it is that's in there, because we do want you to go buy the book, and I want to get a copy of it, and I'm going to, so. Anyway,
I'll send you one.
Listen, wonderful. I appreciate it, and I'll definitely take it because, you know, I don't make much money doing this. But I'll have you back on to talk about the details because I guarantee something. If William Ramsey took the time to write about it, there is going to be some details in there that I won't find elsewhere. So I know this about you just based on other things that I've experienced with you, and I appreciate you. I really do. So tell us about this book, the title first. Its availability, is the update available? I mean, yes. It was published in May, so let me shut up. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely available. I published it in May. Title is Global Death Cult, The Order of Nine Angles, Adam Waffen and the Slaughter of the Innocents. Kind of a long title, but really kind of encompasses kind of recent research into a theme that has kind of permeated some of my more recent interviews, which is the rise of kind of global ideology due to the internet. So you have global cults and global ideas now where people can disseminate ideas transnationally. And this death cult really kind of got its legs during this kind of transnational rise of internet communications. And I've just updated this book with 20 or 25 new pages regarding all these arrests, the involvement of FBI informants, recent killings in Russia, and all these people who are arrested in the UK, these young kids, also a murder that took place in 2020 that was influenced by Satanism and the Order of Nine Angles, some of the writing of the Order of Nine Angles. So it really, this cult kind of came to my attention back in August of 2020. So it's a fairly recent inquiry of mine, and I've done other kind of occult inquiries, but this really caught my eye because it kind of tied into similar themes of what I had researched during the Smiley Face Killers. I've done two documentaries on the Smiley Face Killers, which you can find at Vimeo, where this phenomenon of young men going out at night and being found dead in water, sometimes 40 days later, 21 days later, where there's hundreds of these deaths. And this group, the Order of Nine Angles, their kind of general, central, most malevolent concept is this concept of culling, or selecting an offerer, which is German for sacrifice, and conducting kind of they have a sevenfold way or septenary way, and then the fifth external adept, you were supposed to select an offer and conduct a human sacrifice. So and then get away with it. So part of the program, at least as the Order of Nine Angles writes it out in their original documents, is to kill someone and get away with it. So and you can kind of see this group has grown, and if you see in my book, I have a full section, just for Chapter 7, about the global reach of the ONA. So you'll see events in Canada, U.S., U.K., Russia, Italy. There are groups. They have this kind of cellular organization, almost like a communist cell or maybe an Islamic group. But they have this idea of a Nexian, which is their cell, which they're supposed to kind of influence events. And these Nexions have now kind of are metastasizing and popping up all around the globe. And you see places like New York City, Finland, Sweden, Chile. So it's really kind of a kind of current event, kind of this phenomenon. And I really tried to encapsulate it and capture it in this book, Global Death Cult.
Okay. And that is, a couple of mouths full, right?
So yeah. No, there's a lot of strange words and concepts in this group, and I've really tried to lay them out. I actually have a section, Chapter 4, that kind of talks about their concepts and what they really think.
Well, I wish somebody would create like a flow chart, actually, to explain a few things, because frankly, people throw, like, I heard you use the word Satanism, but I didn't hear you do what a lot of people do. Satanism, the way it stands, is not one thing. And a lot of people don't understand this concept where there is, like, you know, the Church of Satan, which exists now, it's a publicly accessible organization, has existed for a long time. Their general concept is not even about Satan.
They don't believe in a literal Satan, right?
Yeah, they don't. They believe in basically, I mean, if I were to boil it down, right, you know, serious cliff notes, is that they are the god of their own world. Okay, and that's the most benign explanation I can give you for the Church of Satan. Now, that's not necessarily all Satanists, but there is a differentiation here. Now, when you put that aside, put a pin in it for a second, and you also see that there are trends of murders. You know, people watch the general mainstream media sort of, you know, crime reality, crime drama, and they get this silly idea that every murder is solved, first of all. Okay. Right. That's far from the truth. And it's egregiously a deception when it comes to just certain – there are clusters. You know, you mentioned the smiley face killer thing, and I'm – you know, I don't know what to make of some of the things that go on there, because it's a very bizarre sort of underworld.
Definitely. Well, Chuck, just to interrupt, I thought the smiley face killers was an urban myth. That was my introductory kind of assessment of what it was. This right. is a fringe idea. These guys are kind of kooky. Then I really sat down and studied it, and I actually followed the deaths of people who disappeared and ended up in water. There was a kid out of Columbus. His name was Joey LaBute. And another one, his name was Dakota James in Pittsburgh. And that confirmed to me that this phenomenon is real. It's not ever present, but it does happen. So there's something really weird underground. It's risen up. The smiley face killers has risen up in the environment of the internet. And so something dark web is, in my opinion, is going on there. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. But somebody could say to you that, you know, the dark things that have gone on with, like, what is it, the Process Church?
Right.
And, you know, and things like this where, you know, I mean, look, we could all dispense with Maury Terry's work really quickly. You covered it on your show. but, you know, and I'm not certain that Maury Terry's correct. I'm also not certain he's incorrect. You know, he's passed now, but the idea is that many of the concepts that he came up with, this is pre-internet.
Right.
There were networks like this that existed, and one would think just logically, objectively, that if there were these sort of networks of dark cult activity, that they would just, I mean, logically speaking, they'd have to thrive in the age of interconnectivity, global communication, which is a lot easier. You know, you didn't just have telephones you had to play tag with. Oh, no, now we can communicate, you know, directly with, you know, things that disappear, encryptions, all kinds of stuff.
Encryption. I'm glad you mentioned encryption, because that's a central part of the LNA. They encrypt a lot of their communications.
Well, right. That's where I was going to circle back. Yeah. And the thing about it is, it's strange to me that there are a lot of false things that people have developed out there. And I wonder sometimes, and I'm not saying this is you, but I do wonder sometimes if that's been done on purpose too. That, you know, there's a great many realities, and always people find out, you know, after the fact, you know how people have to catch up to the technology and use, law enforcement or otherwise.
Right.
When it comes to, you know, the reaction of the communities, we didn't even know this was coming. Whether it's drugs or whatever it is, they don't even know it's coming. And it's always, you know, in the aftermath, the after action reports, where people figure out, you know, these people were all connected. They had a way of communicating. I mean, even in the case of a lot of the strange cult activity. And, you know, another thing is that people are also under the impression that there's no more serial killers.
Right.
Because it's just not as sensational as it once was in the media environment that was. See, and I don't know. It's like, how would people not think that if there is a dark network of individuals, seriously, and imagine they existed before the internet was, you know, publicly available for use. Military had it. We didn't. But how is it that you would think that they wouldn't take advantage of that if you could believe that they existed? How could you not even believe that they thrive in this new technological environment? Like, how do you wrap your mind? I mean, you and I understand that that's just logic. That's the way it's going to be. Everything is going to evolve with the technology, and especially things that you don't want to do. I mean, it's not like they're going to communicate this stuff straight up on Facebook. You know, come to the human sacrifice over here at this time and address. It's not going to happen there. But the communications that are available, how would you think that people who used to do this by letters and phone calls and whatever else they were doing, how would you think they wouldn't utilize this, right? I mean, you ever have to deal with that with somebody who says, you know, I don't even believe any of your work is valid or any of this stuff. Come on, man. This is all fantasy, isn't it?
Right. Well, no, I get dismissed. I get labeled a conspiracy theorist and kind of other terms or kook or crazy, which is fine. But I think all my work is, you know, footnoted and referenced. I didn't make it up out of whole cloth. And mm-hmm. I actually read a lot of the original documents. It's interesting that you kind of followed that path of how pre-internet and post-internet, because this group started pre-internet, and you can actually see the original manuscripts that were sent out through P.O. boxes anonymously. And really what created the growth was these old manuscripts that had grown pre-internet, then were posted on the internet and really kind of diffused. And it was a strange kind of diffusion, because the Order of Nine Angles at least publicly didn't say that we're a rigid group. You can just take our ideas. And so even to this day, I'm still learning, like, some of the ONI ideas suffused the kind of Nordic death metal bands. So you'll see words like Nexium that come straight out of the ONA, or this kind of idea of the trident of Poseidon, who lives in the water and wants to overthrow the original gods. It was Zeus or something like that. But so you'll see that these ideas diffused, and some people became actual members of the Order of Nine Angles, or some people just became independent people. But you're right. The internet has given people the opportunity, like-minded people, to communicate that they couldn't do it before. So independent people could not, you know, you have to send letters. But now you see people with very strange subgroups on the dark web, whether it's dealing drugs or Silk Road or pedophilia or extreme BDSM red rooms and stuff like that. The truth is those kind of things do exist now, very extreme, very transgressive things. And I think Order of Nine Angles is part of that kind of dark web underground movement.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that a lot of – look, just like anything else, right? I used to live in New York City. And sure, there were the bars and there were the stores. And then there's a network of basements, you understand. All right? And – yeah, the more extreme things that you couldn't get away with in public. Now, look, I don't care if a bunch of consenting adults want to get together and beat each other with sticks. It's not, you know, like, I don't agree with it, but it's not my problem. And that kind of thing then seemed to flourish into, and maybe it was just me trying to come to these conclusions. But it's like, once you could start to do that, though, in the basement of the bodega, okay, It grew and grew, and like-minded people who had things that they definitely would not want to share with the general public, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, really serious religiosity connected to neo-Nazism, or it's, like you said, pedophilia, snuff films.
Snuff films, right.
All that stuff. And all of it, yeah, underground in a literal sense, but underground. There's always been an underground, and now there is a, well, you know, again, apologies to the pop group, but there's a digital underground. And, you know, a lot of it, again, like I said, I don't care if people want to do drugs. I don't care if, you know, you want to wear a diaper and pretend you're a baby. Okay. You know what I'm saying? These kind of right. things are my problem.
Yeah, but they're real. Here's the thing. I quoted in my first Smiley Face Killers movie from a documentary called Kink, where it's like extreme BDSM and people pay, but they're coming in from all over the world to watch these rooms. So mm-hmm. these are like the above ground known BDSM. And I go into like the underground stuff, or I put on the cover of my first documentary, like a literal kind of snuff film being done, and really heavy duty BDSM. But it shows at the end, this person is being drowned by water mm-hmm. and forcibly drowned, like really heavy duty stuff. And I think that part of that is this smiley face killer phenomenon, is that these people are kept somewhere and then dumped later. So, I mean, it gets really extreme. That's part of the body removal. So you fake a death by putting them in water, like, oh, hey, they drowned. We just found them. Right. Well,
and that's the thing, is that people that are satisfying some sort of twisted urge, you know, on the one level, I don't care about it, you know, but when it comes down to, now there are unwilling victims involved. You know, there is your line. And it's strange because, again, like I said, there are literal disappearances, batches of them. Again, none of the media wants to tell you that, you know, there's women disappearing from this area. There's young men disappearing over here. There's children disappearing over there. They don't really focus on it and alert the public, which is kind of weird because, again, I forget exactly how old you are, but I do.
I just turned 53.
Okay, so you're just a touch older than me. You'll remember this. When we were kids, this would have been the kind of thing where be aware. You know, your children are disappearing. Again, I grew up in the, you know, in the tri-state area. I remember Eitan Pates, right? Yes. I still remember that name because that kid disappeared. And they alerted you, and then they said there were other instances, and they would come out. And it seemed almost like a public service was being done. Be aware.
You can leave it out there. You can leave it out there. Sorry.
Oh, no, even the summer, you know, even the Son of Sam killing, right? It was like, be aware. This is happening. You know, and I was alive for that. I was a little kid. But I'm just saying, it just seemed like that's the way it was. And even if, like, there was, like, a handful of kids that would get snatched a couple of states over, it seemed like the alert would go out. And there would be, like, a public awareness. Now, the funny thing is you'd think that with the evolution of communication, yes, indeed, we have Amber Alerts today. But, I mean, with the evolution of communication, it seems like the pushback against this stuff actually is not moving forward as the tool for the evil trade is. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that because, again, and I want to get into the specifics of the death cult, but these are the questions I have in my mind.
Right, but you make an excellent point because not every criminal gets caught and not every criminal wants to get caught. So they do things to not get caught. They're mm-hmm. on the dark web. They're encrypting their communications. I've done tons of shows. Randy Kraft was a gay serial killer in L.A. 100 victims off the charts. Probably one of the lesser known, more highest body count killers out there. I've also covered a kid. It was Sue Ann Kolarik, whose book was found in Jeffrey Dahmer's room about another gay serial killer who would move in between jurisdictions to intentionally confuse the police. So somebody's doing some thinking, calculating. Eiler was his name. He was another gay serial killer. And then I did another one that I covered in my documentary, a gay serial killer out of London who dumped bodies and made them look like overdoses. So he was killing them, but with GHB, which is a common denominator, a lot of SFK cases. And then another case I did was the flat tire murders in South Florida, like 15 or 20 girls, all dead, never got anybody. So, you know, there's definitely, I think it's very important, but there's definitely unsolved murders. And the incentive for the cops is to get those murders off of their desk for one reason or another. So I think the smiley face killers thing was very easy for the authorities because they could just chalk it up to an accidental death and not try to investigate it like some wrongdoing. But yeah.
No, and this and here you've struck upon another theme too, and this will be my last question. Then I want you to lay out for me a little more about what's in this book because this is something, and I've never even said this to anybody, but it's something I've been pondering recently. From Jeffrey Dahmer to John Wayne Gacy, and ever after, it seems to me as though there is never a focus. There's always a focus. What was the relationship with their mother? What was their childhood like? What was their, you know, and one of the things that is really consistent, it seems to me, like in a lot of the higher profile cases and the lesser known cases is, you know, and I'm not saying that homosexuals are serial killers, okay? I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is there are a lot of the most deranged, most violent, most vicious. I mean, clearly, you know, Ted Bundy couldn't be classified as homosexual. But, you know, when you go to the big names, I get it. But some of the other ones, if you ever notice, there's not really a focus on that at all. And I'm not saying that there should be. But it almost seems like it's an unspoken rule about this. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Hold on just a second.
Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. As I said, you know, Dahmer was the whole thing with he wanted to control the bodies of, you know, young men, teenagers, okay. And people will say pedophile. They'll come out and attach that to the serial killer. But it just seems to me as though there's a reluctance to attach homosexuality. And again, John Wayne Gacy is a good example. Nobody, they think of him as a killer clown. And they think of him as the guy who had, a bunch of guys under his house. But I don't know. It's almost like a reluctance to focus on the fact that they're in that world, which just from a criminal standpoint, an investigative standpoint, changes their access to their victims automatically. There's something to it, not what it is. So I'm just curious, if you have anything to comment, because I notice that, again, a lot of the very prolific serial killers, not only is there a sexual basis to it, but a lot of them, it's like very politely, the media call them pedophiles, but will never, ever lean into the idea that, there is a lot of, and I'm not saying that gay guys are always serial killers. What I'm saying is that it changes their access to their victims at the very least.
No doubt.
If they're in that lifestyle. And it doesn't seem as though, it's not just because of the new politically correct either, by the way. But it's just always been almost a general rule not to don't hover on the fact that they're homosexual, basically. Because like I said, Gacy, the guy you brought up, Jeffrey Dahmer, don't focus on that so much. Yeah, they killed men, but not a big deal. They will sensationalize Ted Bundy for his brutality toward women and the sexual basis for it. And stuff like that. I mean, Dahmer, yeah, you kind of got that story, but even then, they didn't really hover on it.
There might be some politics involved in that whole situation. It's interesting, too, because Gacy, who you mentioned, his last three or four victims, he threw in water off bridges. So that was his last or final method of body disposal, much like the smiley face killers phenomenon. But the fact that there are gay killers out there that people are mentioning is very curious. And it kind of ties into your earlier statement about the underground in New York City. There was a movie with Al Pacino called Cruising, which was very scandalous at that time, but it was about a serial killer in the gay underground. And a lot of that leather stuff in my first Smiley Face Killers documentary, I looked into a lot. But a lot of the ideas, like there's a very dark underground, and the ONA is part of it. And it actually, believe it or not, they hallow the life of Adolf Hitler. So it's actually kind of like neo-Nazi, neo-Satanism in this group, at least as it originally was conceptualized. It was conceptualized by a guy named David Myatt, who was part of the neo-Nazi movement in the UK. I think he's a pretty intelligent guy, but he, during his, interest in Nazism, he also had an interest in the occult. And he kind of fused the ideas of the Nazism and the occult together and creating kind of the concepts of the Order of Nine Angles and kind of lived them out. Like he had this idea of insight roles where you would essentially infiltrate groups or places to learn about them and kind of infiltrate them with your own ideas. So he actually became a Catholic priest or a Catholic monastic for about 18 months, and then integrated all that Catholicism into his version of Satanism, which is pretty remarkable. But you also see this idea, their outlook is that people who aren't from the ONA, they have a contempt for humanity. They call them mundanes or homo hubriati, and those are the people that they feel like it is evolutionary change to kill. So it has short-term and long-term benefits to cull or kill these people. So they have a very vicious outlook, and you kind of can see maybe some of these deaths that happen in strange ways might have the person who did it might have been influenced by ONA doctrine. So once you kind of look through their ONA, it kind of makes this mysterious kind of order much more palpable and understandable. But they're very different because I've studied Crowley and I've studied some I've read the Satanic Bible and I've studied some Aquino who died 2 years ago. I did a show on Aquino, by the way. Apparently, I think it was George from Canada said he committed suicide at 72 in San Francisco. But there's actually a section in my book called The Satanic Letters where Myatt is communicating with Aquino and these other members of the Temple of Set, which is an offshoot of the Church of Satan. and really distinguishing himself or his group, the ONA, from the Temple of the Set, Temple of Set, in the sense that the Temple of Set was kind of play, he thought they were play acting at Satanism because they weren't killing people. So you kind of see that at the core, the ONA had a very vicious, very violent outlook, really, from the beginning. And that's what separated them. And I don't think it's a very large group, probably 2,000-3,000 members globally, if that, with other people who might have been influenced by them. But it's their lethality and their lethal outlook and their idea that they really want to create kind of a galactic order. So they have a far-reaching kind of space opera outlook where they're headed towards the solar system. But a lot of these people who they want to kill are the people holding them back from attaining the stars. So you kind of see this kind of cosmology that's been created that it's really a vicious. I mean, the ideas are really vicious, I think.
No, for sure. And look, I can see how somebody who takes this seriously would think the Temple of Set is a joke. I mean, I do recall them in their heyday, communicated with them. They used to encourage you, send us letters, we'll send you literature. And I was in a very strange world when I was a kid, let me tell you, and could tell you some interesting stories. But I remember Aquino getting a lot of attention in the media. You know, and if you don't remember him, if you're as old as me going, what are you talking about? The guy with the, you know, the freaky eyebrows who was, you know, former military officer who was going on every TV show you could think of. I mean, Geraldo and everything, you know, showing up as the representative of Satanism. And meanwhile, the Temple of Set is weird. It's not even like it's not the satanic church I was talking about. These people don't even want to be associated to it because they think it's a joke. And why? Because I think they actually had something more than just the, you know, Anton LaVey's really ridiculous book. And going with the, you know, the Crowley plagiarism from other occultists, by the way. They're going beyond this. So, and I think a good illustration might be, could you give us a very basic explanation of what the nine angles are in the minds of the people that are purporting to support this this concept?
Right. Well, there's actually a dispute between the ONA and the Temple of Set because the Temple of Set had some kind of ritual of the nine angles, and the ONA kind of has this order of the nine angles is – their view, they have this idea of gates, like gates between the current world and the spiritual world is one thing, one way to say it. They would say causal and acausal. And so you have this planet of the planets, but you also have the Earth gate, man's gate, star gate, dark gate, where they can presence dark gods. And those angles in between those and the planets of Venus, Saturn, the sun, Mars, and moon are what creates their nine angles. So it's almost like the nine angles is something representing the planets as well as these gates where they can draw down and presence. And they actually believe, which is pretty crazy, that they can presence these dark gods in themselves. So they have 21 dark gods, and during certain rituals or certain things they do, they can actually transform themselves. They can you know, shapeshift and do other things. It's pretty interesting because there's a very famous singer who put out a video, which is like right out of the ONA. It's called Bad Habits, and can't remember the name of the guy. Ed Sheeran, you know who Ed Sheeran is?
Yeah.
Yeah, go check out Ed Sheeran's Bad Habits, and you'll see the ONA doctrines basically played out before you with the smiley face symbols too, but essentially, the character in the song talks about meeting strange people. You turn change at night. They literally shapeshift and transform themselves at night, which is very ONA. But for me to watch that video that just came out is really astonishing. But it definitely encapsulates all kind of ONA stuff, vampirism. So the order of the nine angles, to get back to that, is really kind of their cosmology, which I think is unique. I think it's different than what the Temple of Set does.
Yeah, that's why I made that point, is that I can see why that would be a serious juxtaposition, because the idea that you can, you know, really transform yourself into something, just my basic understanding, and I got to read this book to get a better understanding, But my basic understanding is the actual, you know, transmutation is not really in the Temple of Set stuff. You know, they talk about ritual and intention. I mean, they're very, like, just like New Age, but turned on its head, you know. Be the bad guys in the New Age, it seems like. I mean, that's what I always took from them, you know, reading their material. And it's just, you know what I'm saying? It's clearly a different animal here. Now, because you brought up the Kino and because I do get questions in either the chat room or on Skype, I think this is a good one. Because you know what's coming, don't you?
Yeah, don't worry. I'll take any questions. Don't worry.
Yeah, I figured.
I have a picture of Aquino in my book, too, because I think he's an important juxtaposition between him and Maya. It's very important there, their interchange.
Oh, and he's a very serious figure in introducing the narrative. Yes. You know, and I dispute a lot of the what people would call satanic panic of the 80s and 90s, because a lot of that stuff, I actually knew where it came from, and a lot of times it was really a reaction to people getting spooked by something else that somebody did. A lot of it was these, you know, pile on things that were being done by kids, honestly, that, you know, today they're in all different directions. You know, they're not all class A Satanists or anything, but they were just, you know, mixed up kids doing things to get a reaction because they saw reactions being gotten. And I, you know, some people object to that when I say, no, it was all. And I'm like, look, you know, at a certain point, you got to understand that teenagers are going to do, you know, certain things to get attention if they're misguided. Okay. It's just it's reality. But anyway, back to this Aquino thing, because he was a prominent face during then.
Right.
You know, people often talk about his connection to the intelligence community. So the question here is, you know, what does apparently not familiar. What does the guest think is the connection between the dark forces in the intelligence community and the death cult? Is it something that's intertwined? Is one infiltrated by the other?
Right. Well, that's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, even going back to Crowley and the intelligence agencies, I get that question a lot. Was he an intelligence agent posing as an occultist or occultist involved in the intelligence? And I would say for Crowley, he was an occultist with intelligence ties. And I would say the same thing at the ONA. I think that it's inception. I think the founder is very intelligent, but I don't see a lot of signs of intel and the connections of the intel. If it's an intel agency, they're doing it all wrong because some people have taken this seriously and killed people. So these ideas, this manuscripts and stuff, for example, transferred to Canada. So a guy in Toronto 2 years ago goes out and knifes and slits somebody's throat after doing ONA rituals. He also possibly killed somebody else, stabbed him. So he looks like he's enacting or acting upon ONA ideas. There's like 5 to 10 kids, young kids, who are reading the Satano-Nazi documents and either getting involved in far-right groups in the UK. So it would be a terrible thing. There was also a London nail bomber, which is a very well-known case in the UK. I think it was 98, where somebody really injured like 500 people. Some very severely blew their legs off, who was associated with the National Socialist Movement in the UK. I don't know how much of the ONA, but he was definitely involved with something that Maya was involved in. So how much of that the idea? I mean, I think that at least here in the States, the ONA – the reason for the title of my book, Putting Together the Order of Nine Angles and Adam Waffen, is the ONA doctrines infiltrated and influenced this right-wing group here that really started fairly recently, 2015, Adam Waffen. And you see their documents, the sinister tradition or these other things that they're doing, and they're clearly getting inside roles. They're going into the military to get training. But so that's another example of where if the intel agencies started this, they made a huge mistake because they're creating all these crazy radicalized kids, young people who now have kind of national socialism plus this idea, these ideas which are kind of novel ideas that they probably wouldn't have. They'd have a much coarser kind of occultism and national socialism without these ideas. So I think that there is intel, and these have been, I mean, in my research, there's such obvious, not honeypots, but such obvious intel projects in the right wing that I shouldn't have to tell you that this is an intel project. So some people have said, it's your job to expose these, secret kind of infiltrations. It's really not my job because you should be able to tell, and you're really not very smart to get involved in some of these groups. Adam Waffen was totally taken apart. They just had something in my kind of newer updates to my book. I include this whole thing about Suter, who was involved in a Nexian of ONA called the Temple of Blood. But there was a statement from somebody from the government told the defense lawyer for a kid named Cole that Sutter was to take like $140,000 of the government's money to essentially kind of testify as a confidential informant against some of these other people and put them in jail. So that was one example of the U.S. government getting in jail. And that's all confirmed. That's one example of the U.S. government getting – and this is just this year. This is literally like 2 months ago. That's right. One example. So I would say a lot of these far-right groups, even Satanism, there are probably people who are informants or maybe straight-up government agents.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm satisfied with the idea that, some of this stuff – look, religiosity doesn't necessarily need to involve – a God per se. Something else can be in the place of God. Like there's a concept that, because I'm getting two other things here in the comments. One of them is that, quite often there is, they call it pagan concepts. I don't think that's fair. What they mean to say, I think, is that there's always an esoteric element, whether you look at the Nazis or you look at, any of these parties, and it could be even a twisted version of Christianity, as we've seen.
Just to interrupt, Chuck, this group has druidic concepts. So you could call those esoteric, but a lot of it is very much a sacrifice. You go out into the woods, you're out at night, you're all in black. There's all kinds of secret sacrifices. I would say that part of it comes out of Druidism.
Okay, no, fair enough. But my point is that when it comes to the intelligence community question, because it's kind of being asked again, here's what you need to understand about the intelligence communities. If they can weaponize it, it doesn't really matter. You understand? The criminality of it doesn't matter. The ethical, orientation of it is irrelevant. If it can be weaponized to serve a purpose, you can almost guarantee that the intelligence communities will involve themselves. Okay, or create it. It's not a far cry. Now, that doesn't mean that every single one of these cult groups, because even when you go back to Jim Jones, right, the whole, is it an MK Ultra project? Listen, very well could be. But it doesn't always mean that these things are not organic growth situations. And also, it doesn't mean that the intelligence community controls the whole thing or anything. But if they can weaponize it, I promise you they will. Okay. I mean, do you think that's an unfair statement?
No, I don't think it's unfair. I think that there's probably involvement in this. But like I said, there's little things that happen. There's Von Nudigem. There was a kid out here, Woodward, who got involved in Adam Waffen and stabbed some 20-year-old Jewish kid. So it could have just got out of their hands. But like I said, the ideas of the ONA have dispersed through occult groups and all over the world. So if they created this set of doctrines, they've unleashed something that a lot of toxic things that have affected families and has really kind of poisoned the global psychosphere, I think. Very fair. I don't think they're super well known, but I think the people who are in that occult underground, if they get their hands on this, they become kind of like death knights. They try to secretly kill people and things like that.
Right, right. Well, okay, listen, I definitely, again, appreciate all this. I've got a more of an open mind to it than I used to, okay? And I'll tell you why. I have said several times I don't quite understand. Now, people, again, might not be thrilled with this, but that Marianne, whatever her name was, that ran for president, who made the statement.
Marianne Williamson?
Yeah, Williamson, who made the statement that there was a darkness, falling over the planet, right? I can't argue with her. I got to tell you, it feels like, and I know that many people have written about this, you know, in modern history for sure, that they feel as though, you know, the darkest time is coming. The darkest time is coming. You know, the doomsday is always just around the corner because of people's perspective at the time. But I got to tell you, there is a weird twist in the psychology that has gone on here. And look, I'm not on board with the, you know, absolutely trust the pronouncements from the authorities when it comes to COVID. Do I think that that is the actions of a death cult? Some people think that's the actions of a death cult. People are going in all different directions, but I see that there is a discord between reality and what's going on in people's heads, okay? And I think that's an across-the-board statement. And almost anybody I've known over the past couple of years has fallen victim to some sort of trouble trying to navigate the world that is not quite familiar to them anymore. Like, the world seems to have changed very much recently. You know what? It could be my sensitivities have changed. But I got to say, I've literally encountered nobody who has been unaffected by what seems to be almost like a force which is universally, in some small way or large way, poisoned seemingly the minds of everyone, no matter who they are. And I made that observation. I've asked the question, you know. Like, why is it that we have become so divisive, so hyperbolic, so ridiculous in our interactions, so disconnected, so non-empathetic? I've asked that over and over again. And one of the weird questions, again, in my Skype, which I'm going to stop asking you there because we're going to run out of time, is, why don't you ask Ramsey if he thinks that this is – definitely a related issue, that this is something that is being done because, look, a ritual among a relatively small portion of the population could be having influence in a very real world way over the rest. That's the way they phrased it. Okay. But I'm just saying, I have felt as though, you know, Williamson was not wrong, that there is a darkness falling over things in the very recent years. And is this the source? Is this a symptom?
I would say that they're part of it. I would say to a smaller degree. I mean, I think that these groups and a lot of the far right groups, they believe in nihilism and accelerationism, accelerating towards their kind of utopia, which is actually a post-apocalyptic nightmare. But so it's kind of like the Nazis. They benefited from, you know, the stock market turbulence and the destruction of the economy. And I think that these groups, if they really want to get in power, they want to create an environment that would seed them into some type of greater authority and power. So I think, and you almost see that with the communists too. They want to accelerate things from their left perspective. So I think that these kind of amoral groups, they have a different morality, I would say, but are definitely part of the problem. I mean, so part of these killings and part of the offering type of thing is to kind of accelerate the evolution of individuals in the globe with that galactic imperium as a goal. Like they have their own utopianism. So some of these people, the pain and suffering they've caused families and things like that, I think is part of their goal. Like they have a very harsh nihilistic worldview.
So it's just the acceleration in this time, more or less. It's not necessarily that, indeed, we may be a little more aware based on the tools presented to us at this time, but this could have been the condition all along. You know, people could still want to talk about the Zodiac Killer, which I think is, you know, pointless. But they still want to talk about it because there's still a mystery there. And there is a, esoteric aspect of it, so to speak.
There's definitely esotericism with the Zodiac Killer, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But in perspective, in context, right, it's not the major case. It's not the major thing that's shaking the world. It definitely didn't do it. It seems to have stopped even, right, that particular set of murders. Right. There are ongoing situations here. And yes, you know, there is the circumstance where, of course, hookers don't count, you know, and of course, Native women don't count to some people, right. You know, and so on and so forth. So there is the dehumanization, the disconnect in a time when we should be so much more easily connected to one another. That is a weirdness that goes on here. And it feels intentional. I don't know. You know, it feels intentional, but it may be that these groups have always existed in one form or another. And, you know, the rhetoric might change a bit, but the goals remain the same. As you said, there's a utopian vision. And what do you need to do before your utopia can come? Whatever it is, whatever your thought process is, whatever label you want to put on it is, universally, it seems like destroy it all right. And rise from the ashes.
Right. Go look at communism. Go look at Nazism. Their utopia was in the East. They were going to create a utopia, Lebensraum utopia, but they had to kill everybody off to get there. And it's the same thing in communist systems, not just Russia, but to get to their utopia, you guys are in the way. You are part of the bourgeoisie, or you are keep holding us back from our utopia, and it's just a river of blood to a mirage. Both of those political systems got to nothing. They never really achieved that much other than a lot of death. So you got to really be suspicious of utopianism, you know, overtly unobtainable utopianism. It's just like going towards the new man kind of argument where they're going to create some fantasy new man when we've always kind of been the same type of people. So, and I think you see that within the ONA actually is that kind of new man, new utopianism. You're supposed to become like a different person when you join the ONA. You become a changed person and not part of they call them Homo Galacticus. So you're no longer part of.
Wow.
Homo Galacticus. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and it's also for the creation of kind of that adversarial worldview where you're somebody and they're not, right? So those are things to be suspicious of too. Like we're not all part of the human family. It's that they are Homo Galacticus and everybody else is Homo Hubriati. So yeah, so you see that within the doctrines, and I've listed everything out in the book. So I have my longest section is the concepts of the ONA.
So, I mean, that's going to be the great thing about this when I get to read it is that we're going to see that you'll actually lay this out, you know, and that is the important thing. If people are not informed, they can't possibly, you know, understand when somebody just references it and says, you know, like you see me kind of struggling through it a little bit because I don't know all the ins and outs of this. I mean, I have a vague concept of it. Right. And that indeed might be more dangerous than anything. Another commentary here, just really quickly, and this is mine, is that, you know, I wish at some point people would recognize that every kind of system that man creates is, guess what, mortal also. You know, and that is a fascinating hubris that goes one way or another, whether it's, you know, the Hale-Bopp Comet cult, or it's Scientology, or it's virtually anything. Okay, this idea that through just going down this path, you are special, and you are special above others. You will also find eternity through this. There is a greater place you're going to. There's always this promise of, guess what, immortality in one way or another, whether it's through vampirism, right? Or it's, you know, and
that's Chuck, just to interrupt, the seventh level of this septenary way is supposed to promise immortality. Right. So that's the kind of solution from their position. It's not the Christian solution, but it's their solution.
No. And that figures because, as I said, universally, this is what you can see. And I'd rather that people were able to spot these things as opposed to getting enthralled by, because at the end of the day, that's the best purpose for this. I don't want to see anybody else get tangled up in these things.
Enthralled is the perfect word, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, best one I could come up with. So with just a couple of minutes left again. You know, because we're going to go a little over because we started late, but I want you to tell people about your site, if you got any recent shows, anything you want to promote first, and you know, just let us know what's in the near future for William Ramsey. I'm already getting a request to have you back because they're like, you know, I hope this is great. I hope you have him back on. I love to. I don't want to bother him too much, but we'll see if we can make that happen.
Yeah, I'd love to be back on anytime. We haven't talked about any of my other books or documentaries. I can talk about the Smiley Face Killers and why people should know about that, especially if their kids are going off to college.
Yeah, no, I watched. I saw that, and I got to tell you, I watched a lot of a lot of documentaries that revolve around murder one way or another. That is real strange.
Very strange. It is happening. It is a real phenomenon, though, unfortunately.
No, and that's the strange. But that's the hardest thing of it is that, again, remember I told you a little while ago when we were kids, they used to alert you when a pattern emerged. 1, 2, 3. This is not three bodies. This is not – there's a lot going on here. I mean, yeah, it takes a while, and, you know, 15 hookers had to disappear or whatever before Joel Rifkin got caught, right?
Right. Good point, yeah.
You know, I'm just saying it takes a handful. It takes a dozen, you know, if they're people that have been depersoned by society in one way or another. And that's something to keep out for. You know, just because somebody is not you and just because somebody does something you don't approve of, you can't just surrender their right to be part of the human family. OK. And that is one of the things that is weaponized against you by the people that either they're a one-man killing machine or they're a group. This is how they continue to prosper in right. their efforts. So, you know, again, if you want to object to anything I said, go right ahead.
No, I don't object. One thing I would like to say before we wrap up is that you mentioned the name Jeffrey Dahmer on my show, on my broadcast, William Ramsey Investigates. I'm having Ann Schwartz on Friday, October 29th at 2. She's talking about the new edition of her book, Monster, the True Story of Jeffrey Dahmer Murder. She was right there. She was a reporter in Milwaukee. So that's coming up, and you can see all my other shows on William Ramsey Investigates. I'll start sending you more. I have 5 documentaries on Vimeo, William Ramsey, and you can see my Smiley Face Killers there. And then my book can be found on Amazon or at my website, William Ramsey Investigates. And I just cleaned it up. A lot of the formatting is much better, and I put in another 25 pages.
Excellent. Well, look, like I said before, we're definitely going to have to do this again very soon. I want to get into more of these topics. I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff here that is curious to me, but is, again, helpful because at all times, as individuals, as part of the human family, situational awareness, unfortunately, is going to involve being aware of some of the darkness so it doesn't swallow you. William Ramsey, again, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Great to talk with you. Take care.
Take care. And you guys stick around in the next hour. It's going to get, a little deeper even. But we couldn't even scratch the surface of William Ramsey. The Ocelli Effect will return after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect,
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JT Sicily and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Shelly.com.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect continues now. We did go to air late live, and this is very cool. I actually delayed the break a little bit because I was having a blast talking to meeting and talking to my guest this hour, Linda West. You're an author of many books. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I read them all, okay? Because I don't do that. I will tell you that a cursory view of your work makes it fascinating because I'm not sure exactly where you're coming from. you're not going to have a conversation with any other interviewer like me. I promise you this. So I'm not sure where you're coming from. So do me a favor, do everybody a favor. And tell us about who you are, how you know, let's just say I'm going to give people a link to your website. I'm going to give people a link to your books. I'm going to give people, in the show notes and all that. So if you're listening to the podcast, it's already there. Go ahead, check it out, because I'm telling you now, just a brief glance at it, you're going to understand that this is fascinating stuff. And this is clearly a fascinating woman. So why don't you back me up on that, Linda, and tell these people – who it is you are, and why it is I'm saying this in some way or other, please.
Yeah, well, okay, where do I start? In the I often say I feel like the straight man in the comedy of my life, because I don't know how I ended up where I currently am. Originally, I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to, like, be a senator and change the world, help the world, you know. That was my focus. Somewhere along the line, I ended up becoming a top model in New York City and then ended up in L.A. So while I was out there, I had an experience around this huge crystal up in Topanga Canyon. Okay. So I should probably preface this with, I'm a recovering Catholic. I was Catholic my whole life. And, pretty much you're not allowed to even talk about crystals or anything like that because, you know, that's of the devil. So this is where, you know, according to the Catholic faith, I'd probably go straight the wrong way. But so I'm around this crystal. And I don't even know how to explain it. All of a sudden, we were all sitting around this big crystal under the full moon. And I mean, when I say it was big, it was this little crystal shop. But the crystal itself was probably, I think, 1,000 pounds. It was, you know, so big we could sit on it. And I don't know where they had gotten this from. It was a gift to them. And anyway, we were up there because it was free. And at this time, my second ex-husband had lost all his money being a rock star. So we were up there for free. And, you know, we're doing a little sending, you know, pink bubbles of energy to, you know, the world for peace and stuff. So it all seemed, you know, kind of just, you know, sweet and happy and good. I wasn't worried about anything. And then all of a sudden, I started shaking and, started kind of moving in weird rhythmic motions. And, well, we all had our eyes closed. So my first thought was there was just a lot of energy and I was like, you know, how you will shake if some, you know, energy comes through you or whatever. You'll be like, ooh, get the heebie-jeebies. But my hand started going up and down and up and down in this rhythmic way. And I was like, what is going on? And at that point, I completely went back in time and I was inside this American Indian that was in front of a whole tribe and I had a rattle in my hand and that's why I'd been shaking my hand. And the weird thing is, and you know, I remember I took Jungian dream analysis and, you know, graduate school and have read a lot about dreams and, you know, how they relate to our lives and things. And one of the things that they often talk about in lucid dreaming, I don't know if you know anything about that, but basically it's when you come awake in your dream. And they say to connect yourself to reality that you should look for your hand because it's very human. It's very wherever you go and the multiverse, it's like the hand brings you back to your human reality, if you will. And it was interesting that I didn't know any of this at the time. This is stuff I learned afterwards. But while the thing was happening to me, it was my hand that went back in time first. And I followed, and it had a rattle in it. And as I looked down my arm, there were feathers on it. Like, and I've got to tell you the complete fear when I'm like, first I'm in there, and first like, whoa, this is really cool. What's happening? And then I was like, look out, and there's this tribe of, you know, Indians looking at me in a fire. And I'm like, hey, all these Indians are looking at me and I have the rattle. And then all of a sudden it dawns on me, oh, shoot, am I the medicine man? Are they waiting for me to do something? Because I really don't have anything to give here. And that's about the time I then went into a vision of me in a teepee. And he, you know, I was in what, oh, how can I explain this? It was like I was in this person's reality. Like I was literally sharing his body with him. So
okay, you're doing a great job so far. You're saying, how do I describe this? You're doing fine.
Okay.
This, look, I've got a couple of questions already. I got to ask them.
Sure, sure.
And here's the thing, I am taking this story in because I understand this story. I've been through a weirder thing in my mind than this, except I didn't have that giant, you know, dark crystal prop there. I've never seen a crystal the size that you're trying to describe, and I've seen a lot of crystals and stuff. That is, have you ever seen a crystal that size, number one? Number two, you glossed over real quick that your ex-husband was, losing all his money being a rock star. Is he somebody we'd know?
Well,
I'll disclose that.
It's just like, what can I say? He got the biggest record deal ever given to a new band, but it was right before Napster came in. They were called the Cages, and they were awesome. Capital won them in a big bidding war. So it was all, you know, we're about to go on tour with Neil Young and the Dead and the whole deal, introducing the first album and dream for me. I mean, Neil Young and the Dead, it's like, oh, please. But, and the best thing was he had such a big record deal and he was very much an artist and he liked to support other artists. So he let all my best friends and my brother quit their jobs and move into this huge, we had this Malibu mansion with a Taoist chef. It was like limos everywhere. It's like, but his only, you know, caveat for living there for free, besides going on tour and like being around and just having fun and supporting, was like you needed to do your art. So if you're a dancer, you better dance while you're there. You're not going to live for free unless you're serious about your art. And so that's when I started writing, actually, you know, because I just had that space of just be creative. That's all I want you to do here. So, but basically Napster came in and the money started getting sucked out of the,
no, it went out of the room like popping a balloon, in the music at that point. And that's what there was to it. So the reason why I ask this is for context, right? Because I'm trying to, you know, we go from, okay, I was Catholic. I maybe wanted to be a lawyer. Then I'm a model. And I'm saying to myself, well, there's three professions where, whether you know it or not going in, you know, selling your soul is part of it. Okay. And I'm not trying to insult you, understand, but look, reality of the business. You know I'm not lying.
Well, see, I didn't know that. I was a girl from Buffalo. All of my friends, and I'm not kidding, they got married to their high school boyfriends at 18, and they're still married, Chuck. They're still married. All my best friends are still married to the same guys from high school. And it's like, I didn't know until, like I said, Harvey Weinstein threw me my 21st birthday party. And if he didn't hit on me before, like, I didn't have any idea until I got down to New York. And the funny thing is, because I was acting down in New York too, and they kept saying, you know, you're really good at acting. Like, you should think about going to LA. And this was how I ended up in LA is really funny because, well, first of all, I stupidly thought, oh, well, movies, being in the movies can't possibly be as like whorish because you have to have a talent. Little.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at you.
I know, that's how naive I was. Well, actually, I don't know if you know who Billy Sheehan is. He was
bass player, yes.
Right, bass player. So Billy was one of my best friends. And when David Lee Roth broke off from Van Halen, he moved out to California. So he said to me, like, why don't you come stay in my condo while I'm on tour and see if you like LA better than New York? You know, because I couldn't stand New York, you know.
So your friend was part of the Eat 'em and Smile lineup then with David Lee Roth, right?
Yeah.
You this ahead of time. But I know Billy Sheehan is. Weird thing. You know, somewhere in the mid-90s, I ended up out there hanging out with Tommy Lee at some point. I don't even know how that happened. And I wasn't anybody. I was trying to be somebody. That didn't work out too well. Anyways. It is what it is. But this gives us a context, right? Where, look, it's not like you were never exposed to new agey ideas. It's not like you were never exposed to, I mean, let's just be flat about this. I mean, I don't know how much you want to, cop to on the air or whatever, but fact is there were drugs available. You could.
Well, see, that's the funny thing. I was a pro cheerleader also, and I was an athlete. My dad was a phys ed coach. I was like sober girl. Like I never did anything. I never tried cocaine or weed or anything until like after my 30s. And then I tried everything once and documented it like a scientist, and like, except meth, because nobody should do meth because that's ridiculous. It puts a big hole in your brain. But So I was totally sober at Studio 54. I was the one, I'm telling you, I was a goober. I was like such a goober thrown in with the sharks. But
with that athletic and that idea, I mean, what? No steroids, no diet pills, no speed to try and keep you.
Honestly, that they elite did give me speed. I didn't know what it was at the time, and that really screwed me up. Like that really messed, you know, my metabolism up for years after that. And it was like, yeah, that was a sad part of the modeling in those days, because that was back when they wanted, like, you know, they wanted you like ridiculously thin. I mean, I was already thin, you know, I was a gymnast, so it's like, yeah, I mean, I went through that, but I never, like, not recreationally, if you will, you know what I mean? So
I understand.
No, I never steroids, no, never anything like that, no.
Okay, well, then probably you were never injured, because that's usually what comes up with these, with women who tell me these stories, and I've heard many of them, where they end up, you know, on the steroids because they get injured, and they need to get back, you know, back to work quick, and this kind of thing comes up, it's usually a doctor. I'm not saying it's the same thing as going out and buying, you know, a crack, okay? I'm just saying that at some point, you know, there's a chemical influence. So this all goes up. Now, I'm not trying to even call out your age. You said after 30, you started hitting everything and see what it was. You documented it like a scientist. So is the big crystal before or after you 30?
Okay, so this is kind of interesting for people that might have this going on in their own life. I didn't know, and I just want to preface this with, I didn't know anything at the time. A new age, the most I can tell you about new age that I knew, you know what I mean, is maybe we went into Malibu Shaman and, you know, bought a little crystal. Like, we were at the crystal shop, so it wasn't but it's not like I had read anything or was knowledgeable in any way, because I was still reluctant because of the Catholic brainwashing. But, like, once this happened to me at the crystal, it was... Okay, this is kind of really funny. So I'll get back to the crystal. So, and no, I've never seen another crystal that big again. And when I went back, it was gone. So, I mean, I went back a couple times after that, it was there, but I never saw another crystal that big again. And I don't know what they did with it, because they moved. It was like weird. But, so that happened, and, I was pregnant at the time. And the Catholic part of me was like, well, let me preface this with, I also, when I said I was sitting in the teepee and I was giving guidance to these different people coming in, they were the people that were around the crystal, people I didn't know. Some I knew, some I didn't know. And he had messages for all of these people, and they all came true. Like, and it was very, what I can say is, like, it was very angelic feeling, very, very angelic feeling. And so...
So you're inside the reality of the medicine man. Let me just get this straight.
It's so crazy sounding. I know.
Just trying to sort it out, right? Mm-hmm. So inside the reality of the medicine man. Mm-hmm. And you see people around you, and they would be the people that would be in the reality of the medicine man. But did those people seem to have, you know, transformed into those people to you alone?
No. Nobody else could see anything. In fact, I went to start doing an Indian, and I realized my best friend sitting next to me, nobody knew I was going through this, you know, moment. And I was like, okay, wait. I said, everybody, like, there's something going on right now with me. And it's like, we each got to sit on the crystal. Okay. And when I sat on the crystal, I thought something would happen originally. Nothing happened. But when I had the experience when my ex-husband's partner's brother from Alabama was out, and he was sitting on the crystal, and he was the Indian that came into the tent that he had given guidance to. So when I opened up my eyes, I said, he told me to tell you this. So it's almost like it happened because I was supposed to give this message to this person. But so... And all of that came true that he told them. And I just said what he told me to say. And the way I heard it was like a voice in my head. So let's segue over. I'm up at the commune, and I'm like, everyone's like, whoa, that was so weird that happened with you. And they're like, I'm like, I know. I was trying to explain it. I'm like, this is so weird. And it's like, I'm feeling kind of like I need to go get some prayer help or something. Like, what if it's like, everyone's like, what it was like, what if it's some evil demon that was trying to get your baby or something, like Roseanne's baby? I'm like, oh my God. So I end up at the Bodhi tree. Okay. Which is a mystical spiritual shop that was in Venice at the time. And I go in and I go up to the counter. I said, look, I don't know what's happening to me, but like this, like, Indian started talking to me, and I think it's an angel, but I don't know what's going on. I'm pregnant, so I need something to, like, a protection, something, you know, like, what to do. She says to me, well, she says, you're channeling. It sounds like you're channeling. And I'm like, what is that? She's like, well, go over to the channeling section. It's like when you, like, bring through voices, okay? So I wander over to the channeling section, and basically it's a bunch of how to channel, and then like rows of like angels and beings that have been channeled, like Ramtha was one, Kryon was one. Are you familiar with channeling at all, or would you?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people claim that they've channeled Thoth and you know, and different entities of sorts, and some of them are common. I believe factually that that people do channel things sometimes inadvertently, sometimes intentionally.
Right.
You know, and it happens more often than you just go see the spiritualist who tells you they do it. Which, by the way, I'm very skeptical of most people that advertise themselves as spiritualists.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say some very incoherent things to me that are just designed to placate the audience they're speaking to. Meanwhile, I find this interesting because, you know, the Catholic reflex, let's call it. did I just get possessed? Okay, so you go to the Bodhi tree, which is a funny name for a place because it's got, you know, to do with the Buddhist, you know, the Buddhist behaviors. Let's just put it that way. But the shop is apparently a diverse kind of spiritual shop, right? And so you're looking at these how-to books, and you had no clue about this at that time when you were looking through it, right?
No. In fact, I had no clue at all. I didn't even know, like, you know, that people could be channeled. I didn't know about any of that. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, I was a model. I was just like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd gone through college. I'd worked on my master's. But I was like, I was just, it wasn't something in my world. So, like I said, I'm looking at the shelves of these channeled beings, and I look at the shelf, and there's a whole row of books, and it says White Eagle, right? And I'm like, and I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, first of all, this can't be the same White Eagle, because that's the first thing. I was like, this is a bunch of bull. And then I was thinking, well, wait a minute, though. I'm like, White Eagle, it's like the Budweiser of spirits. Sorry, White Eagle. I'm like, but like, if I was going to pick a name or make it up, I would have been a lot more creative, like Running Lightning Deer or something. But White Eagle, I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, the Budweiser of spirits. So when I'm looking at this.
A beer before, you might not know what Budweiser is, right?
Yeah, it's right. But it just sounded like, such, you know, a kindergarten level of like, what's the spirit? White Eagle, you know what I mean? Like, so I was just didn't for a moment think that it was the same White Eagle that I had contacted. But this is when you know, like Chuck, this is when you know, like when spirit comes to get you and has a plan for you, there's no running away from it. Because the whole time I'm like, this isn't really happening. This isn't really true. So there's like maybe 30 books there, right? I randomly pick one of the books from this group and I flip it open. And the first thing I read is the first thing he ever said to me. I'm here to teach you the simple things in life. Earth, air, fire, water. We'll begin with water. And I was just like, what? Like, now, what?
Have you ever been exposed to Native American culture even?
Oh, definitely. See, and this is where this is about to come full circle. It's like, my dad is American Indian. We were raised canoeing. You know, the Iroquois Nation is all up in upstate New York, where I'm from, Buffalo, all the way up into, like, you know, all the area, the Great Lakes areas. And it's very prevalent. Like, you can really feel the Indian presence there. You go places, there's the old log houses, what were they? Council houses and things like that. And Letchworth, which is one of the biggest parks, was actually given by a white woman that was captured, I think, by the Seneca, and ended up becoming the chief of the Seneca, and then left one of the greatest parks of all of New York, to the people. And so there's a bunch of Indian relics on there. Yeah, it's very, you know, very influential. Well, and also, and this is where it's going to get really, like, this is where it got so weird. I was just like, okay, I can't get away from this. So now I've read exactly the first thing he said to me, and I flip it to the front, and I'm trying to read about this woman. Some woman named Grace Cook, who says that White Eagle is an angel that came to her when she was a child, and that he's been down three times to Earth in human form as an Egyptian, as a Mayan. And I might say I just finished a book about the Mayans where I became fascinated about the Mayans for no reason. So, okay, so now as a Mayan and as a Mohawk chief from Buffalo. Okay, so now I'm like, what? And so it ended up he was Hiawatha, who was the chief of the Mohawks. And my father hiked us up the Mohawk Trail every summer that I can remember. We camped. I slept at Hiawatha's grave. And it's like, so this whole thing came full circle. And that's how I ended up writing my first book, The Frequency, which I channeled with White Eagle. And when I say I channeled, this is so interesting because heretofore, when I went to do research, everybody that channeled, you know, angels or higher beings had to leave their body to do it because in my language, the frequency of the being was too high for the human frequency to actually hold in its body. So they had to kind of like leave and they would take over and talk weird too if you watch any of those when I watch these other people. But White Eagle made it very clear because – well, he said I was his daughter in the lifetime as an Indian. And so I was channeling my own DNA. Don't ask me. I'm just telling you what I told him. I was like, anyway, in any case, he made it very clear that I would not be leaving. He was going to be there with me like I was there with him the first time, which is why I was shown that so I could understand that we would like share. You know what I mean? Those moments when I brought him in and I never left. So I started a whole new time of channels when the human frequency was high enough, or at least my connection with him was different, that I never had to leave my body. And, you know, so it was always the two of us when I was writing with him. He just told me what to write and I just wrote it. Kind of automatic writing, really. I didn't even think about it. That became my first book, and I ended up connecting a code in the Mayan calendar to our human evolution. Well, White Eagle did. I just wrote it down. And what ended up happening next was I thought I was going to make tons of money off my book, okay, which is like, welcome to the world. So I was looking to give that money away already before I made it. To help the world. And Terrence McKenna had a living library of plant. You know who Terrence McKenna is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he had gone in all over the world with indigenous peoples and collected all the plants and flowers that were known to be healing or magical or had properties of, you know, vision. And he was keeping a living library of them on his land in Maui. So if they were ever destroyed by, you know, whatever, the burning of the rainforest, whatever's going on over there, that we would have the plants. We would have samples and they wouldn't be lost to mankind. So I was looking to donate to that. And he sent me an application for a scholarship. They were going down into the Mayan ruins of Palenque and with top scientists from around the world. And they were giving scholarships to people they thought that if they gave them a scholarship would somehow help the planet. And well, I won it. So I ended up down there with all these scientists. Oh, my God. If you could have seen their faces when they'd be like, you're here. Why? You talk to angels?
Okay. I'm going to tell you something here, which you may find very, very strange, and I'm not going to explain it from my personal perspective for the listener, which they will find weird. But I'm going to tell you that this concept of channeling that you're describing,
yeah,
is actually the right way. The idea that, you know, people have to leave their bodies, and this is a misconception. You know, oh, there's no room in there. That's wrong. And
yeah,
I can tell you from experience, I know it's wrong because it's irrelevant. Size is not relevant. I'm going to leave it at that. Okay.
Right.
It's not like The physical world, there are laws in that world, in that realm, and they are not the same as you can't put 10 bags, you know, 10 pounds in a 5 pound bag. Not true.
For sure. Definitely.
You can. And this is what is ringing very true in what you're telling me. I participated in a variety of spiritual practices. I'm not saying that I am somebody who is gifted like some are. I'm just saying that I've been able to engage and participate. And you get to know certain things. And that is the truth. This whole, you know, oh, I've got to go through this and I've got to go into a trance. And that is also not true. Now, can you create an altered state within yourself, which then does reach out and physically touch others? Oh, yes. Are there various plants that assist you to do that, funguses as well? Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is not just the simple things that maybe we in the West are starting to discover now. I recently had experiences with psilocybin. Not going to talk to you about that.
Magical. I know. We'll talk about that privately sometime because, yeah.
A future show, I would love to talk to you about some of the stuff that I felt as though I couldn't explain to anybody, because you might actually be able to help me navigate some of the confusion I had.
Maybe.
But I steeped myself in this stuff for years and years. What I find really refreshing and fascinating here is you should have had an aversion to this. I mean, not in my way of thinking, but the way that most people would think because of the Catholicism, as you explained, the let's call it the superficial world in which you were participating in. You weren't steeping yourself in spiritual practices from what you're saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it simply happened organically. And maybe it has something to do with genetic memory. We could talk about that at some point, but I don't think we'll have time. It could have something to do with that. It could have something to do with, guess what? If you live on a land, you can become connected to that land, regardless of your ancestral background. But then again, your ancestral background also plays a role in these things.
Sure. So,
you know, never forget that at some point you are inside of your grandmother's body in one way or another, in a physical sense, right?
Right. I mean, right. Really, that's a great way of putting it. I never thought of it like that.
You know, your birth mother was inside of your grandmother's body. A woman was born with all of her eggs. So at some point, the egg that made you was inside of your grandmother's body. I mean, and that's a very physical, scientific connection. But
right.
There's that. You understand. So you and I know what we're saying here. I'm finding this extremely fascinating. This is the first book you wrote. And it's not like there's only two, by the way.
Right.
I don't want to go farther from this too much because I'd like to stay on it. It's a great story. It gives you an idea of the organic reality that, honestly, it's not about you being a key even. It's just about you allowing yourself to observe it. It's there all the time anyway. And
you know, I want to cut in and say, I think that what you just said, Chuck, is really maybe the key, because I think one of the things that really allowed it to happen to begin with is because the lady that was facilitating the meditation around that big crystal initially, she said, whatever comes into your mind, she said, crystals, you know, and I didn't understand, and I'd quickly just want to say, in school, like, I had a science teacher show me about crystals. He came at, he walked across the room, and when he got, a foot from me with dowsing rods, it opened up to show he had hit my, you know, electrical field. We all have it. It's why when people get too close, you're like, you're in my space, because your body extends out your electrical energy, atom and all that, in a farther field. And the dowsing rods will open up when it hits your own aura field, right? Well, then he had me hold a crystal, and he walked across the room 100 feet, and he took one step and the dowsing rods opened up. And he said, that's what crystals do. They just amplified your aura that far. So I never forgot that. And so when she said to me, this crystal is so big and the energy around it is so magnificent that if you've never been psychic before, you might become psychic around it. So whatever comes into your mind, if you get, you know, something for somebody, just say it and don't hold back or judge yourself. And like to what you just said, the like, it's being willing to be open. And I realized at that moment, I'm like, oh, I would love that. Like, that would be so great to actually connect with something truly, you know, other than my own being, you know, my own thoughts, my own self. And it was that allowance and also coupled with the joy of the thought of it. Like, I found that, well, I know you have practices too, magical practices, but like the more you love something, the quicker it comes into manifestation. And I think I was so excited about, ooh, being psychic, wouldn't that be great? You know. And like you said, that allowance. So I just wanted to put that out there for anybody that was possibly wondering, like, how do I open myself to, like, you know, this kind of thing?
Well, right. And look, there's the other thing is that it sounds so it's an overused phrase, okay? But truth is truth. You know, there is a frequency to love, and it's not the lusting for. It's loving something that creates a different frequency. You can see this, and even forget about it. You know, there's people that don't want to talk about esoteric stuff. It's all of the devil. All right. But look, in a realistic way, prayer in and of itself is something that you could describe to a Christian and say, you ever notice how it seems like things will get eased through prayer? And it's not necessary, you know, they'll tell you God did it. But in a realistic sense, everybody prays and people pray to different gods. And they are clearly different gods. But the fact that there is an honest desire among a group of people for, say, somebody to not die, somebody to heal, somebody to have their circumstances improve, someone to be, you know, have their pain lessened in some way. This is something that does physically manifest. Now, does that mean, you know, I'm going to magic a gold bar out of thin air? Not necessarily. But the thing is that intentionality creates a different environment. You know when you're around people who care about you. You just intuitively know that, unless you're a sociopath and it doesn't matter. you know what I'm saying here? There is something to this, and the funny thing is, like, I shake my head because there are people that they hear that. It's a great idea. They love the idea, and then they're very disappointed when – they don't see it come to fruition the way they envision it. You know, it's about participation, not manipulation.
True.
You know, and that's always the missing element, you know, with this kind of stuff. I'm sorry. It's just, you know what? I get so rare an opportunity to discuss this with somebody who might understand what I'm saying. To be honest.
Oh, I totally do. I mean, well, the love thing for me, I think you're right on, Chuck. I mean, honestly, I write about frequencies and the 13th frequency, like the Mayans, you know, I use the Mayan way of doing it from 1 to 13 for many reasons I won't get into. Someday we can if you want to. It's kind of long-winded. But basically, the 13th frequency is the space frequency, which we're 99.99% space. You know, we can go down to all the quarks and leptons as small as you get, but as Einstein said, we're 99.99% space, all of us. So really, we're filled with this divine space that nobody knows what it is. And he said it was God, and the Mayans said it was love. So if we think about the space being this creative force that is filled with the energy of love that we think of as God, and any acts of God are usually loving acts, right? So miracles are really acts of love. Like, love can literally create miracles. So I do believe the power of love has been so, you know, cliched out that we've forgotten, like, you know, just even having, like, sometimes, like, you know, I'll counsel people, you know, and they'll want to work with me about something, and they're trying to, like, mend some bridge, and they want to manifest it. And, like, did you try calling them and saying, I love you, let's not fight anymore? Like, why did you try the first bridge of love to this person that you love? You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to go to the fifth dimension to fix this. Like, because almost everybody melts when you come at them with true love. Even somebody that wasn't any me, if they came to you and said, you know what, I was a jerk, you know, I'm sorry, you know, can we just be friends and start over? Like, if you approach almost anybody with love, you can completely change a situation.
No, absolutely true. And but see, that's the thing about this, when you're participating in what a lot of people, and again, I use the term, you know, esoteric, I use the term occult even, because it's only what's hidden. And it's what's hidden to those who can't see. It's what's hidden to those who don't wish to see. It's what's hidden to those who don't allow themselves to see. And that has always been the most fascinating concept to me, is that there's a great deal more here, you know. And you, if people start talking about, oh, you're talking New Agey stuff, I always go, okay, fine, let's go to your science for a second. Is there or is there not air in this room? You see it or not?
Hopefully.
I mean, you know, you're in California, you might. you're in the wrong part of Jersey. Trust me, there's enough chemicals in the air. You might see the air because it's not
true. You're funny, Chuck.
There's always something that is unseen, but how key is that? The thing you can't see, right, is the thing keeping everything going. You know,
really a wonderful thought. You have some really, like, great metaphors, and ways of putting things that, you know, are very good, allow people to visualize. I like that.
But you see, this is me trying to bridge the gap. Why? Because I would like people to share in this as opposed to, you know, division. And who's my enemy? And who do I have to get angry with? We're far too driven by that. We're far too manipulated by that, by people that want to weaponize it. Sure, it is a natural reaction. It's built there for survival. I get it. But people have used it and abused it now. Yeah. You know, there's the other side. You know, it's just like a stand-up comedian who's no longer with us, right, who quite often would end his shows by saying, you know, look, there's two things. There's love, there's fear. Right?
Right. And
that's it. That's the only two emotions there actually are. And yeah, you can boil down everything into one of those two places.
And you're absolutely right.
Which one do you like? Which one do you prefer? Matter of fact, which one is more productive? You know, look, fear, not respect for something, not, you know, let me throw myself on a pile of broken glass because I'm not afraid of it. No, not that. But, you know, because that would be just intelligence, not fear. You don't have to be afraid of the broken glass if you don't throw yourself into it. Okay. You don't have to fear things once you get to a certain point of acceptance. And if you, you know, nobody's going to succeed 100% of the time, nobody. But if you go at it from that to, you know, that forked paradigm, and you say, I've decided I'm going to go with the path that is not fear, even if you don't want to call it love, go away from the fear. Fear is counterproductive. Fear is the way that others can control you. Fear is the way that you restrict yourself. And that's it. That's all you got to understand to start with. Yes. You know?
Brilliant. So, brilliant, so, for sure.
That. And of course, I'm stealing that from, you know, from a stand-up comic who used to smoke a lot and is no longer with us. But anyway. Everybody's still with us because I'm still repeating his words, isn't it?
Right, right. And there's also a great book called, I wish I wrote it, I didn't. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And that is a life-changing book because, I mean, we all feel fear. And we all feel fear about different things. And that whole concept of, like, feel the fear and then do it anyway, you know? And the other thing I like to tell people when they're stuck is, like, if I really loved myself, what would I do right now?
Hmm. It's a fair question, isn't it?
Takes it back to the love, Chuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not, like, if I really loved myself, what would I do right now, you know? And it starts moving you in profound directions when you just go, like you're saying, away from the fear and into the love. Brilliant, really.
That's it. You know, and look, I have, if you knew my background, I have every reason in the world to not think this way. Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's a guarantee. Oh, no. It's not about sorry. It's what built me. So it is what it is. But, you know, you'd say it almost makes no sense that this guy would go in this direction. You know, my current partner often says, I don't know why you're, you know, like she hears things about my past and whatever. And I don't know why you're not like a serial killer. I really don't. You know? And I go, thanks. Cause it sounds, half of it's cliched like that. But look, I am having such a good time here. I'm forgetting to even finish what's in the rest of the first book for you. I mean, I've got about 13 more minutes I got devoted to you because we started a little late.
Okay.
I want to give you the opportunity to finish that up, but honestly, I just got lost in conversation with you about things that I think need to be said and need to be said more often. And we're both kind of answering one another. This is like call and answer, but just between you and me, you know. And I love this. I'm sorry if I got away from your main story even, but it's just.
Oh, it's okay. This, you know, it's like, you know, a path. You amble off, you see a flower, you end up on the other side of the road. You know, it's fine. Yeah.
See, you know, a lot of stuff, I often do shows with a lady named Maria Heller. I don't know if you ever heard of her, but she is a very interesting lady in this way too. Except you hear two people that clearly were born in the Northeast having a conversation, so it's different. But she's you know, a spiritual advisor and all that. And every time we sit down to do it, it's just, you know what? It's not up to us where this is going to go.
Right.
And it's funny because I feel like that talking to you. I call her mom, by the way. She's not my mom, but I call her mom anyway. Some listeners said that.
Don't call me mom.
No. Not you. I got this.
I'm kidding.
Maria's got it covered. I don't even know how old you are. It's irrelevant. It doesn't even matter. You know, I'm just letting you know that I kind of just did the same thing here where I just let it go where it was going to go. And, you know, I'm sorry if I cut you off on your story, but I don't know. I just felt this natural evolution in this conversation. And this is very cool, and I want to thank you for that before we run out of time for sure. And give you a chance to, you know, what else is in there besides White Eagle and, you know, and your experience with channeling. Obviously, you had to sort of tell the story that you told tonight. There's likely a lot more in there than that. You know, the title of that book. I'm going to give people the website. I'll give a specific link to that book as well. And I say that, regardless of, if I never have another conversation with you again, I tell the listener, go and explore, what this individual's telling you. Cause there is some interesting rings of truth that I hear, rattling around the steel post. And I got to say, I can't deny it. So and this is not normally the subject matter I cover. I cover a lot of history. I talk to a lot of authors, some well-known, some not so. I talk to, you know, filmmakers and people that, you know, are journalists and authors of all sorts. And usually I don't go into this area because I find most of the people that have sent me their stuff like this. It's not even, I don't know. It's badly done. It's with good intent and I appreciate that, but they don't even have their own ideas or experiences, really.
Right. Me too. I've run into the same thing. I'm like, okay, I know I'm always a little, where are you getting this from? Or did you read a bunch of books and then just like write down what you learn? It's rare to get real new information, and which is why I had to write it. I really never meant to be writing the kind of books I'm writing, but I feel like I'm in service, to be honest with you. So I wrote it, I wrote it, and I've written a number of books since then on manifesting, advanced manifesting. First I went into, it was interesting, more the science aspect of law of attraction with frequencies, because the Mayans were very all about numbers and frequency, and according to Terence McKenna, oh my God, well, he said that the Mayan calendar was actually a universal timing system. Like Greenwich Mean Time is a global timing system. So, when you say somebody in Sweden, call me, 7 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time, you both know what that is. Well, he said that the Mayan calendar had been left as a universal time code, so that when we would talk to entities in different universes, aliens, whatever you want to call them, beings, ETs, or different dimensions, he said the only way you could communicate would be to have a time that you could set for a communication to begin with, because say somebody on Vega or something, right? They've got their own time schedule, and somebody over here at Arcturus or something, they have their own time schedule. So how could you even connect with like year time? We're in the third dimension, so we're like in a screwed up one. But I thought that was fascinating. Like, the way he started thinking outside, I'm like, well, that makes so much sense, So the science part of it really intrigued me. And the more I got into the science, the more it leaned into the spiritual. And I had had a near-death experience as a child, and I had had some, I guess also might have opened me up a little more because it was a traumatizing event. They really couldn't get me, even though my body came back, they couldn't get my spirit. And like, those people that walk around and they don't really look like they're in there. It was kind of one of those things. And I wasn't in there because I was still on the other side, which is, I think, why I can traverse the side so easily, Anyway, so my book started out being kind of scientific, but then the more you go towards science, it leans over into the spiritual. You can't get away from it. You get very spiritual, it becomes scientific. Maybe it's the yin yang of life, but so my later books get a lot more magical. Like my latest book is Modern Witch, and that's where I integrate the science of manifesting with the art and craft of witchcraft, which is really to me a connecting to nature, connecting to source, connecting to elements, connecting to life, water, whatnot, and utilizing a power to help harness a reality that you're trying to create. And I realized you need both. You need that energy that you were talking about, Chuck. You need that energy to make it happen. With the intention. So you need the intention, and then you need the force. And there's some people, like, I have a lot of energy. Like, if I get upset, I'll blow out all the lights in a room, which isn't good when I'm trying to make coffee. I'm like, no. If I'm really angry or having a really bad time, I will short circuit like places. I've blown out like a neighborhood before. So I have a lot of energy. So, I started manifesting a lot of things in my life with no money after the fall from grace. After the whole living in the mansion, we were living in the van down by the river. And if I hadn't had that time when I had no money and was pregnant living in the van, I wouldn't have learned how to manifest with no money. And I think everybody needs to know how to do that, because we all try for the money when we're going after our dreams. And the truth is, it's like a fisherman fishing with like one line, just waiting for that dollar to come by, you know, when in essence, if you want something, it can appear in so many ways without handing money over for it. But we never think that. We go straight to money. But there's a whole net of God's possibilities, if you will, that can come through that really brings things in like magic. Because every time I was wishing for something when I didn't have the money, like something great, like I wanted to go on a surf trip and learn how to surf, and I couldn't get on the waves in Malibu because everybody was so rude and would kick me off. I'm like, I want to go to Honolulu. But the bottom line is, like, I kept thinking the only way I'm going to manifest this is if I make extra money. And the deal was, it never happened that way. It would come in some bizarre, magical way. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I never would have thought of that. And that's why it feels like magic. And that's when it feels like you're living a life that's much more, exciting and full of possibilities, instead of just you work your hours, you save your money, you get your trip.
Well, you know, just because we're running low on time, I'm going to tell you this real fast, is that already I've got some feedback about future shows from live listeners that I ought to do with you, because I mention things all the time that I've got nobody to talk to about it. Really, I mean, I know that sounds sad and everything. I'm not sad about it. It's just that the appropriate individual has not stepped forward, is what I usually say. And they will. I don't know how you feel about it. We'll communicate off air. But honestly, we could do a discussion about witchcraft in general, because, frankly, I've taught it. I've lived it. I am ordained as a minister in more than one discipline, and I don't find it to be a conflict at all, because I understand syncretism.
I would love to talk to you about that for sure.
So, you know, stuff like that, I would love to talk about this new book. Really, that's the other title that stuck out to me, by the way, is this modern, because look, the secret and just positive visualization. It's like, you know, they told you, here, be a farmer. Here's a shovel. You know, that's not going to get you there.
You know, you're going to laugh, because the second book I wrote after The Frequency was The Secrets, The Secret Never Told You.
I missed that title. Look, I got a little bit of a visual problem, but it's funny. It's not really a problem. Because I look up at the sun and realize that the sun does not actually send light. You know, I can see that. It sends energy, is what it does.
So
that's different than light. Okay. So, you know, we could go in a lot of directions, is all I'm saying. And I'm very, very glad. Now, I have your website bookmarked on a computer I don't even want to turn my head to look at right now. You know, tell them verbally what your website address is, please, because you go there and her books are laid out on the page I go to. I think that's the homepage. But I was going there and I was looking at stuff. I also tried to look at a few other things. You know, we could even talk about your brief history in what some people might call the alternative media.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, my website is Morning Mayan, and so is my YouTube channel, which I have not made a video in years. I'm going to come back to it, but I have 400 out there. So, morningmayan.com, because I started my channel, like, I'm usually more on in the morning. I'm a bird. So I'm up early, and that's my power time. So I was always doing my videos in the morning. So, thus morningmayan.com. So that has my books on it. Yeah. And then YouTube, if you ever want to watch any videos on frequency or, you know, some of my things, I used to lecture a lot, and, they're on YouTube. And yeah, so all my books are on there also. And, or you can always go to Amazon, Author Central. But warning, I also write mushy Hallmark love stories. So half of them is You know, yeah, I'm playing with life, Chuck. You know, it's my time at the amusement center, and I'm going to have a good time on here. I'm riding every ride.
You know what? Nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with a bit of entertainment. You're writing a little bit of, you know, fanciful fiction, and if that fanciful fiction can educate somebody or just make them feel good for a little bit, nothing wrong with that. You know, so it's – please, this is perfect, and again, I want to thank you. It's been a really fun experience. One last thing, though, you know, you and I might have to meet at a mutually neutral time at some point, because, you know, you say you're the morning person. I got to tell you, I'm the guy who functions well at night.
Well, I stayed up for you, Chuck. And you know what? I want to say something to you. It's not easy to find people that I can have these conversations with either, because it's like speaking a language that a lot of people haven't, you know, learn. So it's like, wait, you speak that language? So I'm equally excited to meet you. So thank you for contacting me. And I believe like frequencies attract like frequencies, along with David, who I adore too. So yes, we can talk anytime on air or off.
Excellent. We are going to do that. So Linda West this hour, William Ramsey the last hour, and that's the end of the Ocelli Effect for tonight. So no matter who you are, where you are, I want you to remember that I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect tonight.